Creating Change with Doug Foresta, a show dedicated to creativity and emotional healing. Creating Change on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Doug Foresta.
Hello, welcome to Creating Change. This is your host, Doug Foresta, as always. Today, the topic is going to be how to start a movement or how to spark a movement. And this has been on my mind because lately, as of this recording, you probably have seen that some of the social issues that have been going around for years and years and decades are coming back to a head, and they seem like they have some stickiness. So particularly I'm talking about things like the Parkland, the students at Parkland and their demands for gun control and additional gun laws, as well as the Me Too movement and Black Lives Matter would be another one as well. You see that it's interesting because I've taught social policy for many years. And of course, you know, this podcast is all about voice, and it's all about sharing your voice in the world in a way that is impactful. And I wanted to share with you the work of a man named Gene Sharp from the Albert Einstein Institute. And I have talked about Gene briefly on other episodes, but I've never really gone into any depth into Gene's work. And I thought that it would be really interesting to do that and hopefully useful to you, whether you're a blogger or a podcaster or whatever type of change maker you are and whatever kind of content you put in the world. Hopefully this will give you some ideas about this idea about how to start a revolution, as Gene Sharp says. And in fact, there is a movie called How to Start a Revolution, a documentary about Gene Sharp that I highly recommend. It's really good. And again, when I've taught social policy, I shared this video with my students. I watched it myself when I was a student in graduate school in social work. But, you know, before I go into all that, I just want to say a little bit about this idea about movements. You know, it's really interesting because how a movement either gets sticky or fizzles out is, I think, partly in our control and partly not. You know, the time has to be right for a movement, for sure. And so I think about the movie 9 to 5, you know, with Dolly Parton. That movie was originally made in the 1980s. A lot of the stuff that's in there would be very relevant to the Me Too movement. If you're not familiar with the movie, I definitely recommend that you check it out. Not that it's a fantastic movie, but it addresses issues that are still as timely 30 years later about chauvinism and about sexism and about sexual harassment in the workplace. And, you know, in the 30 years, I mean, there's been more laws enacted and things like that. But reality is that a lot of the issues that existed in that movie 30 years ago still exist today. But it's only been recently that the Me Too movement has picked up steam, and it's actually impacted some of the men. And I say men because it's mostly men who have been the ones who have been sexually harassing and sexually assaulting women. And of course, you know, we've known, I mean, there's no way when you look at some of these people that have been at the forefront of this, people knew about their behavior. You know, it was known, but it was accepted. And then all of a sudden it's become not acceptable because this movement has picked up steam, and it doesn't appear that it's going anywhere. Now, you know, there's no given with, you know, the idea that, you know, it's not a given that the Me Too movement will continue or that it won't fizzle out. Any movement can fizzle out or can go up and down. But as of this moment, it appears that the Me Too movement is still going strong. Same thing for Parkland. It appears that the Parkland students and the Parkland movement, beyond just the students themselves, appears to be building up traction. And in fact, lawmakers in Florida did respond to the incident. You know, the shooting in Parkland, Florida, and the, you know, the demand for gun control, there sort of needed to be some response because of the movement. So what I want to share with you is the work of Gene Sharp, and that I think can really be helpful if you're thinking about starting a change movement, or even helping to, maybe you want to, you know, piggyback on to some of the existing change movements and really help them. So Gene Sharp, like I said, he actually wrote a pamphlet called How to Start a Revolution, and his work has actually been adapted in many, many countries for nonviolent action. And he has one of the things that, Gene Sharp has is the 198 methods of nonviolent action. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to go over 198 methods, but I will go over some of them to give you an idea. And if you want to see the full 198 nonviolent actions, you can go to it's aeinstein.org. So go to www.aeinstein.org, and that website just has a treasure trove of information that you can use for social action. So the idea here is one of the things that Gene Sharp realized is he's really committed to nonviolent action and to basically create revolutions, not violent revolutions, but revolutions of thought, revolutions of democracy through nonviolent methods. And he what he found is that actually when you meet violence with nonviolence, it's much more effective because it becomes sort of like a judo effect. The more violent, the more that an oppressive system comes down on you, the more that you can show that you're nonviolent. It only diminishes the legitimacy of that system. So that the more that that system tries to, I mean, a good example of this would be Dr. Martin Luther King. And, you know, the unleashing of hoses and dogs on innocent people in the 1960s, those images delegitimized any kind of, you know, and any they took away any legitimacy that that those police officers had about, you know, upkeeping law and order, because it was so obvious to anyone who wasn't a blatant racist that that wasn't OK. Right. And so that's kind of that that's sort of the idea behind this idea of nonviolent action. So let me go over a couple of these for you. So some of them are pretty straightforward methods of nonviolent protest. He talks about letters of opposition or support, signed public statements, declarations of indictment and intention, group or mass petitions. What's really cool is, you know, in the age of social media, a lot of these things now take on even more relevance. And if you think about mass petitions, there is a website called change.org where you can actually start any petition that you want and spread it through social media. And so there's more opportunity than ever to do something like this. So if you were looking to create a petition, I would recommend change.org as a place to go, a powerful place to start that. And then you could start sharing that petition on social media. Another thing that Gene Sharp talks about is this idea of communication with a wider audience and the use of slogans, characters, and symbols. Now, it's really interesting because he invented this stuff way before social media, but the idea of symbols, for example, you know, the hashtag, so hashtag Me Too. I mean, you can argue that the Me Too movement really took off because of the symbol behind it, behind the hashtag, hashtag Me Too, right? And the idea, the simple idea to say, if you've been affected by sexual violence, if you're a woman who's been impacted by sexual violence, then, you know, put hashtag Me Too. And that just created this incredible wave, right, of activism. And it's really interesting, though, because, like I said, I think social media just lends itself more and more to this type of nonviolent action. The idea of slogans, right? You know, whatever that might be, think about, you know, what's a slogan that I could have for my movement? But hashtags are great. You know, the Black Lives Matter, right, is definitely it's a slogan, it's a symbol, it's all those things at once, right? Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Very, very powerful. Of course, at the same time, you know, whenever you do this, you should be aware that there's going to be pushback from the other side. And so that's what we've seen, right, with Black Lives Matter. People saying, well, what are you saying that only Black people's lives matter? Of course, that's not at all the case. But, you know, that's the kind of pushback that you can get. But the reality is that that pushback still has not diminished the Black Lives Matter movement. Also, the other thing is, you know, in terms of communication with wider audience, you know, he talked about records and radio and television and skywriting and earthwriting. Now, I think today we don't necessarily need to do skywriting or earthwriting. I think that I really think social media is probably the biggest way to do this, right? You could do leaflets and pamphlets and books, but the reality is most people today take in content in digital form. So it could be, I think, you know, if you update this for the 21st century, it becomes things like apps. It becomes things like social media sharing, creating Facebook pages, creating Instagram. you know, profiles, creating Snapchat, whatever the form of content that you think, whatever distribution method you think is going to be best to reach the people that you want to reach. If it's younger people, then it may be things like Snapchat, right? If it's older people, it might be more like Facebook. But the idea of communicating with a wider audience, I mean, it's so much easier now. And in fact, in the Tunisian revolution and some of the revolutions in the Middle East, Twitter was a big part of this, and Twitter became a huge part. They were consciously using Gene Sharp's methods, and Twitter was a way that they were doing that. Some other really cool ones are symbolic public acts, wearing of symbols, delivering symbolic objects, destruction of own property, the new signs and names, symbolic sounds, displays of flags and symbolic colors. So these kinds of things that I'm not a fan of Antifa because they are not nonviolent, but you know, some of the symbolic things they do, you know, the wearing black and having black flags would be considered part of that symbolic public act if they weren't engaging in violent acts, right? And they don't only destroy their own property, they destroy other people's property. And so, you know, that to me is something that I don't advocate. That's definitely outside of the value system that, you know, that I operate in within as a social worker. But some of the things they do fall into that symbolic public act. But think about that. You know, one of the ways to really have a movement take off is simply to create a color. I mean, if you think about the color pink, what do you associate the color pink with? And if you're like me, you probably think breast cancer awareness, right? So there are, you know, could you take a color and appropriate that color for your movement? It helps to create, again, it's a way of taking, it galvanizing the maybe passions that exist, right? So there's a group of people that you know out there do care about whatever it is that you care about, whether it's sustainability on the planet, whether it's, you know, whatever social justice issue, it doesn't matter. I mean, whatever the cause is that you are most passionate about, what is there a color that you could appropriate to represent your movement? And then what you can do is, again, using social media, I mean, it's really up to your creativity, but you could, for example, you know, brand everything with a certain color. You could have t-shirts, you could have, you know, paraphernalia that you give out to people all in the color of your movement. And that is a great way to, again, galvanize people around a particular purpose. One of the biggest issues why movements die out is because, or never start in the first place, is because they're not strategic enough. And this is one of the things that Gene Sharp talks about, is the need, you know, really the need to be strategic when you're thinking about social movements. Because if we're not strategic, the passion that people have is going to die out, because it's, you know, it's like a flame with no fuel. And, you know, either what could happen is that flame just burns into a forest fire that you no longer can control, right? It becomes really destructive, or it just dies out because there's no real fuel or aim for it. So very important that we're strategic about our purposes when we're doing these things. Some other kinds of things that we can do. He talks about pressures on individuals, like haunting officials, taunting officials. Certainly we've seen some of this stuff. We've seen this on YouTube. We've seen the young man from Parkland who confronted Marco Rubio and asked him about taking NRA money. These kinds of things, I think one of the things that's been so popular and that's been so powerful about Parkland is part of the optics of it is that these are young people. And the more that politicians come down on them, the more that they themselves seem like oppressors. So they have to be careful about, you know, how much they come, you know, if it was an adult, they could really come back at them. But because these are young people, and they are young people that primarily look like the dominant culture, it's very hard for politicians to just dismiss them. And it gives them an opportunity to really put pressure in a public way in front of cameras on politicians. And that can be very, very, you know, certainly very powerful. Some of the other things that we've seen these definitely in labor unions and things like that: walkout, silence, turning one's back, assemblies of protests. So certainly we're seeing that, right? Protests. I think, again, that one of the things that we have to remember is that when we talk about protest, you know, again, I don't think that a protest alone is enough to start a movement. I think that the protest, in thinking about that as part of a larger strategy, can be really powerful. But sometimes I think we think of protest as being an aim in themselves, right? And it's important to remember that, for example, with Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, the I Have a Dream, the March on Washington, was part of a much larger strategy. He did a lot of other things to get to that point. And even after that point, he did a lot of things after that. It was one piece of the movement and a very memorable piece, but not the entirety. So it's important to remember that protests in themselves can't be the whole movement. Some of the other things I think that we have already seen are things like this idea of non-cooperation with social events, customs, and institutions. So suspension of social and sports activities, social disobedience. Really interesting here in terms of course, in sports, what we've seen is if you're familiar with the Colin Kaepernick, former quarterback from the 49ers, from the San Francisco 49ers, who kneeled at the anthem. Very powerful, nonviolent form of protest. You know, it sends a very strong message. And of course, you know, there was a lot of backlash to it. A lot of people saying that it was not patriotic, but it actually was a very effective form of social protest. And then as it grew around the league, right, the way that it grew around the league, it was really interesting because some of the players decided to do things like everyone would hold hands in unity around the anthem, which the whole point of kneeling for the anthem is that it was a social protest. It was about sparking a change. You know, holding hands in unity around the anthem is not a revolutionary act, right? It's pretty much expected that, you know, the anthem, the United States, you know, the national anthem is the national anthem of the United States, and we all honor and respect it. What becomes revolutionary, what becomes a way of starting a revolution or starting a social movement is the idea that you're engaging in social disobedience by taking a knee. That is the very, you know, that is a courageous act. And so, you know, whether you agree with it or not, that is it's non-cooperation, right? Very different from the idea of we're all going to hold hands during the, you know, and show unity during the national anthem. That is outside of social non-cooperation. It was a very strategic thing to do. So think about that. You know, how could you, and again, you can use social media to organize something like that, but doing something where you engage in social non-cooperation. Of course, you have things like economic non-cooperation, like boycotts or refusal to rent, or, you know, in the labor unions, you had things like, you know, just refusing to work, you know, done lots of things like that, or withdrawal of bank deposits, refusal to pay fees, dues, assessments. This kind of economic non-cooperation can be also very, very powerful. And again, can be something that is, can be, you know, used, you can use social media to gather something like this. So for example, you know, Harvey Weinstein's company has gone bankrupt now. Not because people weren't seeing Harvey Weinstein's movies, but I think because people weren't going to invest. But could you, for example, if you're starting a social movement and there are corporations that are not, you know, that are investing in shows, that are investing in programs, that are investing in individuals that who are doing things that you believe are detrimental to your cause, being able to put pressure, for example, on those commercial sponsors and being able to get them to withdraw their corporate sponsorship can be a very powerful way to have a social impact. At the same time, you could also, again, in terms of revolution, I mean, you could also say, let's not watch this movie. Let's, you know, nobody go to this restaurant. A couple of years ago, there was Chick-fil-A had it came to light that the owner of Chick-fil-A had given money or was giving money to organizations that supported anti-gay and anti-gay marriage causes. And so there was a whole uproar on social media and people were boycotting Chick-fil-A. And, you know, to this day, I still don't eat a Chick-fil-A for that reason and probably never will unless they really change their ways. So there are lots of ways in which you can use social media to organize, you know, these economic boycotts or withdrawal of money. I mean, these are things that, again, are ways to really put pressure on larger systems to create change. Now, it's really interesting. There's a great book by Dr. Michael Lerner from Tikkun magazine, and he talks about this idea of it's about being overly helpless, you know, that we find ourselves, I can't remember the name of the book right now, it'll come to me, but the idea is what Michael Lerner talks about is this idea that we think ourselves to be more helpless than we actually are, because we operate and against a system that says, don't bother to try to change us because you're not powerful enough and we are so powerful. And if you ever tried to do that, it would just come back on you. Surplus powerlessness. That's the name of the book, Surplus Powerlessness. And what he says is, and he gives examples, it's a great book, by the way. If you ever get a chance, I highly recommend checking it out. What Dr. Michael Lerner says is that, you know, he says that we really shortchange ourselves, that we actually have a lot more power than we find ourselves to have. In the movie, the movie How to Start a Revolution with Gene Sharp, you know, one of the things Gene Sharp talks about is this idea that even, let's say, if you're going up against a government that has tanks and has modern weapons, you know, the most modern weapons, the most modern planes, you know, those tanks are useless if there are no soldiers to go in them and operate them. Those planes are useless if there are no pilots to fly them. Now, that may change. You know, that's one of the scary things in the world, is that with drones and with artificial intelligence, that may actually change. But at least as of this moment, for the most part, military equipment is only as good as the ability of and the willingness of the hearts and minds of people. And I don't think that that will change. I think, you know, dictators and governments and corporations and power structures need the cooperation of most people. They need the legitimacy of most people. And so one of the things that we can do using social media, using our creativity, using our voice, is to find ways to delegitimize those structures, but not to, you know, one of the things that Gene Sharp talks about is that we don't want to just create a vacuum of no power. And of course, that power structure then can get filled with who knows what. That's how you end up with something like ISIS, right? We take out Saddam Hussein and then now ISIS comes in. You've taken one bad thing and put another bad thing in. But to replace that power structure with democracy, with goodness, with social justice, with things that you believe will make a better world. And what's really cool is that I think it's more possible than ever now for a single individual to use the internet to gather with other individuals, to share your voice. And I'll give you a couple just as we wind down here. Just a couple of thoughts. I mean, even if you were to start a blog, right? A blog or a podcast or a vlog, whatever it is, whatever the form is, and you get a couple other like-minded people who join you in what you believe, right? And you share your voices and you share out to your groups. Each one of you develops a following and you communicate, collectively to all the people that follow you. How long would it take before you could get 1,000 people following you? How long would it take before you could get 2,000, 3,000, 4,000? You know, I don't know the answer to that. It really depends on where you start and how hard you work. But I can tell you that in my experience, producing podcasts for individuals and companies all over the world, that getting to 1,000 followers is certainly possible. Anyone can do it. And once you get to 1,000 followers, who knows where that movement goes? But once you get to 1,000 followers, you really have the start, the beginning of something. And you're going to make people very nervous, you know, people that don't agree with your cause, right? If you get 1,000 people to sign a petition against the NRA, if you get 1,000 people to wear t-shirts and show up to protest, you know, whatever it is, you know, unjust treatment of women in the workplace, you're going to start to make a dent. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that you wait till 1,000. I'm just picking that number because it is a number that I think, you know, has a significance. But, you know, once you get to 10 or 20 or 30, I mean, it's the journey of it and the growth of it. But never underestimate the power of social media and the power of your voice and the power of a collective and strategic movement to make a difference in the world. And I think more than ever, we are in a place where this can be done for not a lot of money. It can be done, you know, high schoolers now, right? The Parkland students are able to do it. If high schoolers can make a difference in the world, if they can march on Washington, if they can put pressure on their on their politicians, then certainly we can take advantage of all of the resources that we have, right, in a strategic way. So my challenge to you this week is to think about, in what area of your life do you want to create change? And are you creating the change that you would like to see in the world? And if not, how could you think about, for example, creating a color, a logo, a brand, you know, more of a brand for your movement? And think about a couple people who might join you in the beginning of that journey, right? And get together with them. Think about, what is it that we could do? Do we want to start a Facebook page? Do we want to start a Snapchat? Do we want to start a meetup? Whatever it is, I challenge you to do something different, to do something bold. And I'd love to hear from you about your efforts and what you're doing. You can email me at dougforesta@gmail.com, dougforesta@gmail.com. As always, remember, your voice matters. Keep creating. The world needs your voice. Take care, everyone. This is Doug Foresta. I'll be back next week with another episode of Creating Change.